you take the fact that, you know, there were a lot of net positives that came out of COVID. Hybrid work is and remote work is here to stay. That really wasn't the du jour, you know, before March of 2020.
Have you ran into scenarios where someone has a ton of talent, a ton of skill, but they're possibly stuck for one reason or another?
It's really just about a values misalignment with a culture or a boss. I mean, we've always heard, you know, people leave bosses, they don't leave companies. When people have decided that they become unchallenged, dissatisfied, unfulfilled, you know, and they desire change, they truly are not just interested, but they're committed to making that change. That's where people like myself can help to guide them. My friends in CPA firms, you know, data is their new currency, right? In career, relationships are currency.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone, once again to Rochester Business Connections on the Real Business Connections Network. I'm your host, Ben Albert, and I am here today with Kathleen Pringle. What's going on, Kathleen? How are you?
Great. So nice to be with you here today, Ben.
I'm excited. I literally had to cut the conversation off to be like, we need to click record because this is getting fun. This is getting juicy. I know this is going to be a great episode. And as a quick introduction, Kathleen is an executive leadership coach. She's a career strategist. She was just the president of Rochester Rotary. She just passed the torch to that. And ultimately, she's a great person helping executive entrepreneurs and the like. So welcome again to the show. That's kind of a quick introduction. Anything that you think's important that we missed there?
I think that what I would want everybody to know is that career, work, you know, people that has changed so much in the last 3 years. We'll just call it 3 years. And, you know, the whole idea of, you know, what is work? What does work mean to me? I can go on and on because I have the good fortune of being asked, like, you know, for my point of view or opinion on certain things. And this has never been a more exciting time. And I think it helps to have 3+ decades of experience and rearview mirror to be able to talk about, you know, why we're here today and what we can do going forward. But it's a really exciting time to do what I do, which is really to affect the lives of leaders and professionals who really want to change not only what they do within their industries and their organizations, but really even in the world.
So there's never a better time to help affect someone, do better in the world. But why are you so excited about, you know, this time? We're in 2023 right now. Well, what's so special?
Well, I think that, you know, it's a combination of you take the fact that, you know, there were a lot of net positives that came out of COVID. Hybrid work is and remote work is here to stay. That really wasn't the du jour, you know, before March of 2020. And what that's done with regard to talent acquisition and the ability for people to really, as I call it, flip the paradigm where we found our way into work, and we're going to talk, I'm going to speak in the context of professionals, you know, and careers as opposed to jobs. And, we all came into our professional lives where we pretty much built, you know, our life around work. And then, of course, COVID happens. And I think, you know, we flipped that paradigm where all of a sudden people said, you know what? I'm going to take stock of really, truly what's important. And now it's more the notion of I am not going to ignore my life, my values, the things that are important, because I learned a lot by watching what happened, how businesses behaved, what it is that happened to people I care about. And so now the paradigm, instead of us building our, you know, our lives around our careers, now it's just the opposite, where people are building their, you know what, careers around their lives.
It's powerful. What would you say to someone who feels like maybe they aren't in the right career? Have you ran into scenarios where someone has a ton of talent, a ton of skill, but they're possibly stuck for one reason or another?
Yeah. And I think that what you just said, one reason or another, it's so many reasons. And what might be your valid reason might be different for somebody else. And so sometimes it's really just about a values misalignment with a culture or a boss. I mean, we've always heard, you know, people leave bosses, they don't leave companies. And a lot has changed. You know, everybody in one way or another needed to adapt. And some people have a different level of resilience. And, you know, in some cases, people, you know, 3 years later, and especially in Rochester, where we're both sitting right now, you know, I took a poll not too long ago when I had an opportunity to be on stage and, you know, asked how many people are back to their pre-COVID work arrangements. And a majority of people in our marketplace are, you know, hybrid for the sake of flexibility, but everybody's pretty much back. And so when people have decided that they become unchallenged, dissatisfied, unfulfilled, you know, and they desire change, they truly are not just interested, but they're committed to making that change. That's where people like myself can help to guide them, help them in most cases with not just a transition, but in some cases a transformation, because they're going to become through that process of leaving an organization is going to happen. You know, who they're being and who they have to be, where they are, is not working for them. So how can you not change when you're moving through a transition?
One thing, it's powerful. What stood out to me is their commitment to the change. Do you help them find that commitment, or do they need to be committed before they come and work with you? Because I know personally, I was in a role. My girlfriend would tell me otherwise, but I was happy with it. And then when COVID hit, I was furloughed and was forced to change. But I was committed to staying with the company at the time. It's like I didn't even know what I didn't know at the time.
Yeah. So sometimes what happens is that people know that something's not right. And one way or another, they'll find themselves in a conversation and you should reach out to Kathleen Pringle. Who's Kathleen? And so they'll go look me up, or they'll, you know, learn about the work that I did with somebody else. And so if you focus on like who it is that I work with, it's typically that senior professional or that executive, that person who's got a couple of decades of professional experience. I have colleagues who work with what I call the campus to career crowd, you know, and people that are at the beginnings of their career. I frankly don't think I have the right temperament to work with new professionals, and I own that. And so the result, you know, I am best. My zone of genius is working with those executive competencies and bringing people through those more complex situations where there's a lot at stake. And so to get back to the question, though, is that when they know something's not right, they oftentimes think that all they need is a strategy to get the heck where, you know, out of where they are. And instead, I give them the opportunity by meeting with them to help them understand, not just, you know, we're not going to run from, we're going to run to wherever you'd like to go next. And that is incumbent upon some awareness of where you're at in your life. What are the things, what's the struggle? What's the vision of what it is that you want to still accomplish? Because again, these are people that I work with who are forward-focused, typically motivated for change. They impact things, they make things happen. And something's not going right. Maybe they were passed over for something and they just say, you know, out of principle, I need to move on, or but it's time. And in the career that I had for the better part of 17 years before I started to do career management with executives and leaders and teams, was I worked in the recruitment and executive search space. And so it was in that era before 2000 that it was people like me who were moving executives' careers. But that's not really the role that search consultants play anymore. Yes, they will provide that kind of insight and that perspective around where they can go. But frankly, search consultants partner with me all the time. And they say, Kathleen, you need to have that conversation with them. We are working on fulfilling a search requirement for our client, and we're not providing that kind of, you know, guidance and counsel.
You've got the glove treatment. You're holding them by the hand and actually walking them to, again, walking towards something good, not running away from something bad. Right. Talk about your transition. So it sounds like you walked towards entrepreneurship at one point. Go back to wherever you'd like. Tell us a little bit about that backstory.
Sure. So I went to school. I went to undergrad, Denison University in Ohio, and had thought that I was actually going to follow my dad into medical practice. That was the plan. And I have a cousin. Our fathers were partners. Ben's growing up, brother-in-laws, you know, my dad's sister married, you know, what was then my dad's best friend, but then became my uncle. And so they were in practice for years here in Rochester as OBGYNs. And so the second generation would be myself and my cousin. She ultimately did that, but my path was a little different. So I graduate from school. I, you know, take all of the MCATs, the everything to move on. And that's what I thought my plan was. And I took a summer temp assignment in an ad agency just to, you know what, bide my time until I was going to, you know, start school. And lo and behold, it changed the trajectory of my life. And I ended up in this role where, you know, part of my love of psychology, which was one of my majors, was that I loved motivation and behavior and how that translated in this environment, you know, in this ad agency where they had the Wegmans food account, the Bausch & Lomb sunglass account, you know, the mobile thin film snack bag account. I mean, it like, and I was thrown in the middle of all of that. What, you know, and here I was thinking, what the heck am I doing? Thinking I'm going to go to medical school. So anyway, I took that assignment covering a maternity leave. She came back from, you know, to fulfill, step into her role again, the woman I was covering for. And I, in the meantime, was asked by one of the account executives if I would be willing to leave and go with him to the agency he was moving to. So I did, because I just knew that that was, you know, my path. It was my path. And so I did that. And within a year of doing that, Ben, the agency I was working with had no way of knowing this. And I don't think at 22 years old, I had enough foresight to ask. Okay.
Sure.
But, you know, they were sold to an organization in Albany, and everybody that was in Rochester could either move to Albany or would be given severance. And there I was within a year, like in transition. Okay. Yeah. So I found my way to a recruitment firm. And the real short story there is that I went to interview for a pharmaceutical sales position. And instead of, they sent me out on one of those interviews and I was not selected. They chose somebody who had a year of experience already in pharmaceutical sales. And instead, the owner of the agency, Marty Agnew of Wetterings & Agnew, I was sitting in their lobby. He walks in the door. I stand up. I think I had my pearls and my, you know, long hair and my suit on. And I stood up and I said, "Hello, Mr. Agnew," because I recognized him in the picture. And he said, "Hello,
you." And I caught off guard.
And we had this conversation, and ultimately it led to a 17-year career with them, where ultimately I learned, you know, the fundamentals, and then I, you know, ran one of their divisions and ended up, you know, ultimately leaving after 20 years because I learned enough about the business to know that people don't buy recruitment services and staffing services in a recession. And I knew we were heading that way. And so I ultimately left and I joined a firm that did executive outplacement only for executives. And in our market, that was, you know, at that time, Kodak, Bausch & Lomb, Global Crossing, you know, all of our largest companies would send their executives to our firm. And we had a couple of competitors in the market too. But I essentially, because I had placed human resources and finance professionals, one of the reasons they wanted me at my company was because I had all those relationships. And so they were the money people and the people. They were the ones making decisions about what would happen to, you know, people who were going to be liberated from their organizations. And so that was literally leading right up to 9/11. And then 9/11 happened. And of course, the market changed. And so since then, I had a lot of experience. I worked in Rochester. I worked for our New York office and, you know, found the Kathleen Pringle, if you will, who had those kinds of relationships for the New York market, our New Jersey and Connecticut markets. And, you know, flying to New York on a daily basis was easy before 9/11, not so easy afterwards. My kids were young. And I just, and you know, you talk about transition. I just knew. And it didn't help that, like, one day my son called me, and the only person in the world that he needed in that moment was me. And I was in a cab on Fifth Avenue. And I thought, all right, you know, I'm a mom first. I mean, I love what I do. I everything about what I did, I loved. Which was, I grew our footprint and, you know, worked with a lot of our, you know, our clients, because frankly, in some cases, I actually put those clients into the organizations that they were now separated from, you know, as leaders, CFOs, VPs of finance. And so I said, it's time. And frankly, I was more clear about what I didn't want to do. So I resigned. I mean, I resigned and I was more clear about what I didn't want to do than what I did want to do. And immediately that network, you know, I was always taught, you know, network or not work. So it's your relationships. And I started to, you know, talk to people and, you know, so, what are the unmet needs in this organization? Well, what do you want to do, Kathleen? You want to sell? And again, nothing felt right. And I actually had been a 40 under 40 in 2002. And I had made a promise to myself that I was going to take the first half of my career and have it inform the second half of my career. And then I was going to do something and launch on my own. And that's what I did. And so in 2003, I launched my company, and it's evolved. It's not the same company. I was doing a lot of, you know, distributing a lot of assessments, pre-hire assessments, and doing a little bit of coaching and working with clients around their hiring and selection process in those early days. And over time, I have become that trusted advisor to executives and leaders and their teams around how to advance your career. And a lot of that, of course, is about who you are, growing your leadership. So, you know, gotten credentialed along the way and do a lot of things, but it's all around continuing to be relevant and impactful and purposeful as a leader.
Continue to make the impact. And there's two main things that kind of stuck out to me, and they work perfectly together. You mentioned how you weren't 100% sure on what you were going to do. You just knew what you didn't want.
Yeah.
And I think that's powerful, because everyone feels like they need to have this master plan and they need to understand their why. And sometimes it's more like, what don't I want? And right. Then the second thing that stood out to me is networking. Like, what did you say? Network or don't work?
Network or not work.
Network or not work. And it's like, okay, so I know what I don't want. I'm not 100% sure what I'm going to do, but I can lean into my relationships and networking to gain a little bit more of that clarity. Am I on point or am I off the ball? Talk a little bit more about how relationships seem to bridge all the gaps in your career, if I'm hearing properly.
Yes. And so, you know, in the opportunities that I have to speak, you know, I oftentimes will talk about the distinction between ROI, which I think we all know, you know, return on investment. But then you know, when I'll say, now, do you all know what ROR is? And they'll say, return on revenue, return on. And I'm like, you know, and of course, I do a certain amount of work at Simon. And of course, that's the first one they think about. Return on revenue. But I said, return on relationship, the ROR. And they're like, yeah. And I said, you know, and it's like, what do we learn? Some of the fundamental principles: you give to get. Okay. It's like, we have to, you know, we make a lot of deposits first before we start making withdrawals. You know, you have to, you know, credit before we debit. And so we have to invest, and we have to look at, you know, our relationships as, you know, this is the currency. This is the currency, you know, to my friends in CPA firms, you know, data is their new currency, right? In career, relationships are currency. Think about, you know, we all hear about the hidden market. And now with the advent, you know, and I call it advent, but with the emergence more and more and more of where AI is going to play a role, in not just business, but even in terms of how it is that people learn about who and where and their why and what's going on. You know, I think it was, I can't remember when, but some time ago, I had read that, you know, by the time we hit the 20th century, which of course now is 23 years ago, but the 21st century, that it was going to be about success would belong to the people who would learn how to manipulate symbols most effectively. And to a certain degree, that is proven itself, okay, in terms of how it is that we know how to utilize and leverage technology. Now it's the different next level conversation relative to AI, you know, and technology. How do we recognize tech, you know, AI is a tool. It's a tool. Okay. You know, people, and will it ever be smarter than humans? Well, perhaps, but it's not human. Right. And there are certain properties about humanity. And so, you know, again, relationships rely on humanity. We are emotional first and rational second. And I think that, you know, one of the things that came out of the net positives that came out of COVID is, you know, we all talk about the, you know, the stigma, especially in this country, around mental illness. And so we have a huge, huge emphasis now on, you know, mental wellness. And you might remember, you know, it's okay to not be okay. And it's okay to say you're not okay. You know, I spent many years in our community on a board, Compeer. I even had the honor of, you know, chairing that board and being matched with somebody for 19 years as a volunteer to her. You know, she was my friend. And we lost her last year. But she taught me so many things about, you know, this is a woman who had a diagnosed mental illness, and that was a condition that she didn't ask for, but she was a human being. And she taught me so many things about you know, what it meant to be human and to be, and so Alma was her name. And she, you know, I look at that and I say, okay, that's what she taught me is never going to be part of AI. So, you know what, right now I know that people, as long as people and not machines are, you know, driving our workforce, relationships matter, and how to develop those relationships is a lot of what it is that I can guide people through, you know, some of the strategy around that. Mm-hmm. But it's incumbent on people to be willing to be courageous, because it means change. And most of us know, I mean, we'd rather, you know, be safe than not safe. We'd rather, you know, all those things about, you know, the human condition. And so I work with all of those things and recognize that I don't care if you've been the CEO of a publicly traded company and, you know, you are the thought leader in your industry, you're still a human being.
Right.
And we both get up at the crack of dawn every day, and we both go through a couple of cycles of, you know, sameness every day. And so therefore, you know what? That means that we need to understand, what do you value? Why do you value that? You know what? What kind of impact do you want to make? And if they don't have clarity around that, asking them the right questions, just like you ask questions for a living, so do I. You know, it's you know, coaches ask questions, therapists and counselors can provide direction and counsel. I move in and out of that coach role and that consultant role all the time. And I ask permission when I'm in a coaching conversation. Can I offer you some direction?
Right.
Yes. Because otherwise, you know what? Coaches should be asking people questions so that they can lead to their own decisions and conclusions.
You're preaching to the choir and you're lighting me up. I love it. I was taught that the quality of our life is a direct correlation to the quality of questions we ask, not only of others, but of ourselves. Yeah. And in a place like you mentioned the AI thing and like programmers, let's say you're a computer programmer, you're a tech, you're an engineer, you're always going to be able to get a job. You're honestly probably less and less of you out there over time. Those people are going to make a ton of money. That's a fact. For anybody else that isn't playing with those numbers, the playing field's leveled. We all have the same access to the same technology. Don't you think the people that are building those relationships, I joke all the time with ABC, always be closing. I say always be connecting. Think the person that's planting those seeds, making those deposits, making those connections, they're, again, if you're a computer programmer, you're going to kick ass, you're going to do fine. But if you're a layman's guy like me, I'm nothing without the relationships I get to build. And I'm wondering, you said how you can help teach people this. Like, so I know a few things, but I'm still learning. Like, what would you recommend to someone who's thinking like, you know, my network actually isn't that big, or my network is from 10 years ago and now I've been comfortable? Like, well, what are your thoughts for someone who doesn't have quite a large network and they want to change that?
Okay. So, they want to. That's the key.
Yeah.
Okay. They want to. Okay.
And there when's the best time to make that change?
The best time to, you know, ABC, always be connecting, you know, people will find themselves in transition or they're wanting to affect a transition. That's not when you start to grow an organic network from the start. It's a little late. I mean, you know, Tom McKay said, you know, when's the best time to plant a tree? 20 years ago, right? So, you know, one of the things that I would say is, all right, if you want a network, where are we pointing? Instead of, again, that running from versus running to, you know, we're looking for relevance, and we're not necessarily looking to leapfrog over the people that we already know. I mean, we all know we have tools at our disposal today, you know, the power of LinkedIn, the power, you know, and there's lots of other platforms too, that are either paid or, you know, accessible to a certain group of individuals based on their business level, men and women. And, you know, I know a lot of women leaders today that are choosing to belong to a new platform called Chief. Okay. And much like a peer advisory group, there is community in that group. And it allows for, you know, women to connect differently than they would through the algorithm availability of a LinkedIn. But to go back to the question, you know, what would I advise? Let's decide, where are we pointing to? Who would be the best people to talk to? And it's not that you want to already start at the top. Sometimes we need to gather intel down here to be able to ready ourselves for that conversation here. So it's not just the, you know, the who, but then it's about what questions do you want answers to? And then it becomes about the meeting. I know, unfortunately, too many people who spend weeks figuring out who to get to, and they finally get the meeting. They finally get the meeting. And then they blow the meeting. They blow the meeting because they didn't use the meeting for its intended purpose. You know, if it really truly is a connecting meeting, I'm looking to glean insight and perspective. I am looking to have a better understanding. I understand that you are, you know, a leader in this industry, and I have four questions that I would love to be able to ask you. Transparency. Yeah. You know, we're all busy. And the one good thing about, you know, our market, Rochester, is that we are a really helpful group of professionals around here. We will truly avail our times. And now with like Zoom, you know, we can make that stuff happen. We don't have to take time out to go meet somebody, you know, offsite. We can do that right here, and we can get that done and keep things moving. And then the most important part of all of this is managing that. Managing that. And we have so many tools to do that. But etiquette, just basic etiquette. You know how many times people will ask for your time? Hey, Ben.
Oh, yeah.
You know, can I buy you a cup of coffee? You know, and in my
case, you're going to get me fired up.
Yeah, Link, can I buy you a cup of coffee? Well, no, this is what I do if you'd like to talk about your career. Frankly, that's why I don't work out at Midtown. Because too many people used to come up to me on the stepper next to me or on the treadmill next to me. And, can I talk to you about it? It's like, no.
I joke about this all the time, Kathleen. It's like two options. So option A is, hey, I'd love to buy you a cup of coffee and pick your brain. And immediately what I'm thinking is, do I get the brain cells back after you pick them? And yeah. My time is more valuable than a $2 cup of coffee. And at some point, like, you have to have that attitude, or else people are just going to pick your brain away. Now, option B is, Kathleen, I'm doing a video series kind of research report on the highest level industry women leaders in our community. Can I ask you four questions?
Yeah.
Which of those two are you going to reply to?
Right. And I even take people through that, you know, just all those things that sound silly, but they really matter. Yeah. You know, I know what you intend when you want to pick someone's brain, but the more diplomatic professional way to do that is to ask for their insight and perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, when you refer to your ex, it's your former spouse or your children's mother or father. You know, it's just more diplomatic and more professional. It speaks better of you than it does by, you know, because people listen to the words you use.
Yes.
Okay. And they form opinion and even judgments. And, you know, again, oftentimes if it is networking and the expectation, and I'm glossing over a whole lot, but like, you know, the expectation is that, you know, you have impressed upon someone who you are and your value, and would they be willing to be of assistance to you? If you're not someone that they really would want, you know, to hitch their wagon to because of how you describe or speak about it, it's not going to happen. So there's just all of those things. And I'd like to say that everybody learned better and knows better, but they don't. So it's those things, because yes, while we are a very generous group, time is that non-renewable resource, and we only have so much. You know, I always say to people, when Kathleen, I really need to work on time management. I said, replace time with choice. What choices are you making? Because I have the same amount of time that you do.
Yeah, it's laying in bed. So I do it, so I'm not passing judgment, but laying in bed for 4 hours straight watching Netflix is a decision.
Yes.
Just how waking up early because you didn't binge Netflix and maybe going to Midtown Athletic Club, that too is a decision. We still had the same amount of hours to work with. I get lazy sometimes though, Kathleen. That's the truth.
Well, but you know, the one thing I will say is that, you know, again, that whole idea of, you know, building our careers around our lives and what's important. You know, I believe that, you know, we all understand that, you know, there are certain choices, behaviors that will help you to live a more vital, vibrant existence every day than not. And so those, again, those are choices. And whether it is, you know what, I will move myself from this chair and get out of this and walk the parking lot for 20 minutes, or, you know, I'm that person who loves, like, you know, I got to get my sweaty workout in. So I'm that person that you'll find at Orange Theory Fitness 4 times a week, because I just love, like, I love the idea that I make decisions all day long and love it. But that's the 1 hour, 4 times a week when someone else tells me what to do and I just have to do it. You're going to run for 30 seconds and you're going to do the, or 2 minutes. And I'm just like, okay, great. Great. All I have to do is make the choice to do it. That's it. I don't have to figure out what I'm doing.
So you're not supposed to tell people your gym because they're going to cancel their one membership and get another membership to try to check it out.
I didn't say which location. I didn't say which location.
I'm really curious about this. So, like, what is lighting you up? Like, where are you allocating most of your time now? Like, what? Where are you putting your time, and why are you spending it where you spend it?
Okay, so I had the you mentioned at the top of our interview that I have just completed my term as president of Rochester Rotary, and
give some background. Rochesterians probably know, but Rochester Rotary is not just like a little small fishing club. Like, this is like a big deal.
So Rotary International is the largest humanitarian service organization in the world, and Rochester Rotary has been around for 114 years, and our particular club, which is the largest in New York State, is unique in that we own and operate the Sunshine Camp that serves 2,500 children and young adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities. We also have a partnership with one of the city schools, the K-8 city schools, that we've been doing for 30 years. And we also help our world neighbors, international service, and our local nonprofit. So among our 340 members, there's lots of service opportunities for us to make an impact in our own community. And I've been a Rotarian for about 20 years. And I had the distinct honor of being asked to serve as club president for this past year, the 2022-23 year. And it just so happened to be during the 100th anniversary of the Sunshine Camp. So there was lots to do in terms of bringing visibility to the camp and, you know, and engaging members on our way out of COVID and bringing everybody back to a weekly meeting that we do with interesting speakers and knowledge that we're not going to get anywhere else. But, you know, again, like-minded people who all have DNA in their, service in their DNA, and who really want to make the world a better place. And we do it right here in our community, and then have the opportunity to network as part of a global organization with other members of other clubs locally, regionally, nationally, internationally. And it's, you know, it's just really been a highlight. But with my time, what I'm focusing on now that I've got a bunch of it
built. A lot of free time now compared to, you guys brought Stephen Covey to Rochester, the big events. Like,
well, I had four goals, and that was, you know, growth of the club and impact in our mission and visibility and engagement of our members. And so the visibility was brought about by bringing a, you know, a world renowned, really, but a, you know, author, Stephen M. R. Covey, who is Stephen Covey's son. He wrote Speed of Trust 12 years ago, and he wrote a new book, which was really around leadership. And of course, very interesting to me, no surprise. But Stephen Covey, Stephen M. R. Covey, wrote a book called Trust and Inspire. And it's really about how leaders lead in a post-COVID world. And it's really a, you know, again, it was pretty wonderful. In fact, I've got it only because I've got it right here. I can pull this up, but everybody was given a deck of cards to accompany the book. And these cards right here are literally your way through navigating the book. And we had over 500 people in the community that came to lunch to listen to him. Sponsors who were more than willing to, you know what, make sure that they brought their employees there. And book clubs have started from this, discussion groups. It's been wonderful. And, you know, again, the whole concept of a trust and inspire leader is, you know, he used a very powerful metaphor I reference it a lot. And he said, if you know Death Valley in California, Death Valley gets less than an inch of rain every year. And so if you look at the topography, it's brown ground that's cracked and it's dead. Death Valley.
Yeah.
In one particular year, it was an anomaly, but they got 3 inches of rain. 3 inches, not at the same time, but they got 3 inches of rain. And what happened is that when you looked at what happened there, all of a sudden you saw growth popping up from underneath. And so if you look at that and you say, okay, think of that as your team. Mm-hmm. Every individual has gifts. They are living, growing beings. And if you do the work to cultivate those gifts as a leader, a manager, you know, a boss, then you will bring out and inspire the best in those people. But you need to, you know, give them trust to do so. And you know, and especially in this changing environment, this workscape that we've got where we don't have eyeballs on everybody anymore, you know, because, you know, and so now we're navigating a whole new set of challenges like, okay, well, we want everybody back, but not everybody is here. And now you want me back, but the people you want me to work with, we're not all here on the same day. So now I'm on Zoom in the office as opposed to Zoom at home. So, you
know, right.
Yeah, working on all that stuff. And but Trust and Inspire was very powerful.
Yeah.
And not only was that a opportunity to showcase and talk a little bit about Rochester Rotary, but it ultimately translated into some new members for the club. So that was great.
And somehow I'm not a member yet, but I'll be signing up soon. So I feel like a jerk because I was at the event and it was an incredible event.
Yeah.
So we went on a tangent. We have to wrap up soon, but I want you to answer the question of like, what's new and exciting? You've passed the torch as the president of Rotary.
Yeah.
You've got all this time on your hand. What are you going to do with it?
Yeah. So I'm going to do a bit of a pivot. Okay. A bit of a pivot. I will continue to, you know, work with executives who are in the throes of their careers and help them to strategize and advance as leaders and to make the right transitions and transformations. At the same time, I'm very excited that I will be launching some national cohorts that are really around focused on those executives and leaders who know that they are within the, you know, final year or so of their principal career and that they really want to have that epic legacy, okay, that epic enduring legacy where retirement's really not part of their lexicon, and yet they've got all this knowledge and they've got this energy and they'd like to be able to really develop a portfolio lifestyle. And so what these cohorts that I have are going to do is to give them that opportunity. There's some, I've always believed that there is some, you know, safety and anonymity. So you've got people from, you know, the West Coast and the East Coast and, you know, tech folks and finance folks and, you know, much like a peer advisory, but instead of focusing on the, you know, the issues of their business, we're talking about their lives and how they're going to leverage their equity, their professional equity, and go make a difference in a portfolio kind of way. And whether that's an operating director with PE, private equity, or they want to, you know, paid board, sit on a paid board, or they want to start a business, or they want to. And, you know, these are very experienced leaders, but yet there's this huge chasm that we find between identity and desire. You know, I want to do this, but I'm not sure about how to do that. So they'll get some inspo from the people that they have, you know, proximity with. Mm-hmm. And yet they'll also get some one-on-one. And then I've got a team of people that will provide the resources, whether it's the, you know, the board bio or the, you know, all the stuff that we need to do to be able to make them visible. So it's targeted for that specific group of people. And I'm very energized because when you've got 76 million baby boomers in this country and 10,000 of them leave their professional roles every single day, I don't need to work with all of them, but I know that we have an opportunity to impact some.
You can help a bunch and make that impact. And what I love about impact is you help 10, 20, 100, 1,000 of them. They go home to a happier family, a happier workplace, and they go off and impact more people too.
Yeah.
Everybody wins.
Yeah. Yeah.
How? So,
it's been, I hope you were able to, I mean, I am so fortunate. Blessed, fortunate. I have had the best mentors in my career. I created a board of advisors when I started my business. I'm accountable to them. And that's not just my accountant and my attorney and, you know, my insurance representative. I mean, this is a group of people that, you know what, they have access into the back end of, and they can go look, you know, they can go look. And that's how transparent I am. And, you know, I know when they're in there, but I know what they're looking at too. And, you know, and that's the way I chose to do it. And I just, you know, I've always believed, you know, there's sometimes it's like, you're either growing or you're dying. You know, you're either married or you're not married, or you're pregnant or you're not pregnant. I mean, there's like no half about that. So it's like, you know, and like these absolutes here are, you know, important, and we're moving into a new era and people are living longer and they want to thrive and be vital and relevant. And, you know, noble purpose is really important. So, you know, you're not there yet, Ben, but you know, when someone says, hey, what are you going to do when you kind of like, you know, hang up your cleats, you should have an answer to that.
Yeah.
At least, you know, an idea. And that's what I do, is I help them to develop the plan that they don't necessarily have to implement right away, but instead of racing to the end date and then saying, all right, I'll figure that out. I know too much from the work I've done with mental health and working with executives and what happens in transition sometimes, that, you know, let's be preemptive and let's really understand what those options are, so that, you know what, you can then finish and know that you're running towards something.
I'm going to lose sleep tonight, Kathleen, because I'm asking myself. So most listeners already know this. I feel like I already hung up my cleats. I am living like I live like I only have a few days every single day, and I'm traveling more and I have my passion projects. But the second layer, and I think a lot of people who even are like living like there's no tomorrow right now, the second layer is like, what would you do if you didn't have to work at all? Mm-hmm. Because I still have my day job for, you know, helping businesses, marketing. I hung up my cleats in some regards, but I've never really thought about, like, if I didn't even have to touch, if no matter what I did, I was set on income, what would I do? I think that's a powerful question for any of us to ask.
Well, I think, you know, and some of the other questions sometimes are, you know, if not to be a fatalist here, but like if you knew, you know, if you went to the doctor and they said, look, you've got you've got 5 good years left. You know, what choices would you make? And, you know, and then here's the other question is that if you went to your doctor and they said, look, you know what, you've got 9 months. Okay. You got 9 months at most. Now, 9 months is a short amount of time, especially if you're not of optimal, you know, health to start making up for lost. So I take that question and I say, what if you got that news, what would you regret not doing? What would you have regretted? So then you turn that around and say, well, we better get busy. We better get busy planning, you know, because I know that's not my situation today. So therefore, you know what are we going to commit to? Not interested in, but what are we going to commit to making happen?
You might put yourself out of business, though. I don't think anyone's going to say, I regret not working more.
But, you know, unless there's lots of ways, to accumulate wealth. Okay, let's put it that way. And we all
regret the decision you made to accumulate the wealth, working too much in the wrong job, hurting people, not having the lifestyle you need.
Exactly.
To avoid having that regret, you kind of help people make sure that they're in the proper position.
They're in, you know, and they're tracking. And so, you know, every fourth quarter is the busiest quarter for me, and it has been up to now. It might change a little with this new model, but, you know, I have the good fortune of maintaining relationships with my clients over many, many years. We help them to get where they're going, but then we, you know, again, all part of cultivating the relationships. And so many of them get on the calendar to have that career discussion, that annual career discussion. And it's usually centered around, okay, what are going to be the 3 most important things that you accomplish in 2024? So in about a month, okay, month and a half, they're going to get the email. And they're going to say, yep, I want to schedule time. And that time will be October, November, you know, December. Mm-hmm. And if they say yes, then they're going to get the questions because I change the questions all the time. And they're going to get the questions that I want them to contemplate. And then what will happen is they will meet. And they don't have to rehash their history. You know, I can use Voxer and they can fill me in on certain things beforehand and whatnot. But, you know, then we sit down and we map it out. How are we going to grow your thought leadership? Is this the year to make a transition? Is this a year to make a move internally? I mean, what are we doing here? But knowing that then there's accountability throughout the year. We met once, but then there's some other accountability. And that's how you keep on growing and advancing.
So we're going to go rapid fire.
Yeah. Okay.
I have a bad habit of letting these podcasts run 5 hours. I could talk to you all day long. Before we go rapid fire, though, remind us, how can I support you? How can I find you online? What should I do next?
Yeah. So website's being overhauled right now, but for right now you can go to KathleenPringle.com. You can certainly find me on LinkedIn at Kathleen Pringle. And those are the 2 primary places that you'll see me, as well as, you know, and some of my other video stuff that's connected to that. So, I love to be out there and speak, but how can people help me when you know that somebody really deserves to be happier and more fulfilled and challenged in their career? Just let them know that I might be a resource for them.
You're there to help.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. And all that's going to be in the show note description. So you can click that just a click away to get any of that information. You and I joked, I used to ask this question a lot, but I haven't asked it in forever. So we'll start the rapid fire round with it. And it's a bigger question, but $100 or less, what's the best investment you've made in your career?
The cup of coffee that I bought because I was curious. It's one of my things. I was innately curious, and I decided somebody endowed courage in me to just reach out He's, what's the worst thing that could happen? He'd say no. And I said, I would appreciate the opportunity to glean your insight and perspective and ask you 4 questions. And ultimately,
I like how you said that. Rewind that, guys. Listen to exactly the phrasing and the professionalism. I'm sorry, but go on. It's beautiful okay. The way you phrase that.
Thank you. Thank you. And so it wasn't even $100. It was a cup of coffee and then maybe a follow-up lunch. So maybe we are up to $100 by then, but it was the beginning of what ended up being and continues to be a wonderful professional relationship that has really been one of the highlights of my career, being able to learn about an industry that I was curious about, be able to then be invited in to learn about their company by him connecting me to other individuals in the organization. Then they invited me to come and work with their teams to help the team fortify their EQ and their cohesiveness. And then that led to me being able to move to all of their other markets and do the same thing. And, you know, again, because of a decision to have some courage and ask if I could buy someone a cup of coffee and ask them 4 questions.
Love it. Yeah. Again, guys, rewind that.
Yeah.
One message, 4 questions, friend for the rest of your career. It's mind-blowing how that can work. So let's go actually wrap it. I often start with coffee or tea. Do you prefer the coffee?
I do. Coffee.
What about cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Favorite online social media platform?
Probably Insta.
Instagram.
So yeah, I do. Yeah. Yeah. I do on a weak moment get sucked into, you know, the TikTok videos though. I really do.
Hey, you got to stay up on what's trendy and hot, you know, TikTok's on fire. Just to have a little bit of fun. So let's say, you're getting excited. You've got a board meeting. You've got, you're speaking a big event coming up. What are you listening to in the car? Do you have a favorite band or a favorite song?
You know, I love all genres of music. So my playlist, you know, I was looking at my top 25 playlists, and believe it or not, I mean, I just like good old rock and roll. So I'll just, you know, I mean, give me the Stones, just give me, yeah, I'm there.
We'll do one more, and this is going to go on my recommendation sheet. So a book or a podcast, just something that I could learn. Is there anything you'd recommend based on our conversation, or honestly, just take it out of left field if you want?
Okay.
What's a good book or podcast you'd recommend?
Okay. Well, you know, one of the books that I always recommend, and it's been out around for a bit, but an author by the name of Gay Hendricks, that's male, Gay Hendricks, he wrote a book called The Big Leap. And it's really about, you know what, you finding your zone of genius, because we all know that when you operate in that zone of genius, days fly by, hours, and you are just like making things happen. And everybody deserves not just to understand why you exist on the earth. Purpose is important, of course, but really to zone in on your zone of genius. And I recommend that book all the time.
I'm adding it to my list.
I recommend a lot of others too, because I'm a reader. I'm a voracious reader, but that one is really a good one for anybody at any stage of their career.
So the answer to this question is going to be a million things, because we could talk all day, but is there anything we missed today that you want to leave our audience?
You know, I think that for every professional, this is not new, but it's worth reinforcing, is that it's your career and you need to own it. You need to own it. It is not anybody else's to own but you.
It's your career. You need to own it. Network a little bit more. Say that again. I keep forgetting network or not
network. Network. You know, I have grown sons now, but when my kids were young, I'm like, you know, really network or not work? And they're like, Mom, that is so cheesy. Stop it. And they came to learn. They came to learn of the power of relationships. And each of them have had some pretty nice things happen to them as a result of their willingness to learn how and then to actually maintain and, you know, their relationships.
Sounds like they had good guidance. It sounds like we all listening have some good guidance. I do hope people go to the description, follow up with Kathleen, check out the Instagram, check out the website. Most importantly, let her know if she can help you. And thanks again for coming on. It's been fun.
Thank you. It's been fun. Really appreciate it, Ben.
We'll talk soon.
Okay. See you.